All right, we are live here with a Schloss rant, live from the Philadelphia suburbs. It's Monday night, just about 6 o'clock as we are recording here. And I got to break down the New York Giants' terrible, horrendous, despicable loss to the New York Jets yesterday. So the first thing that you're going to talk about with this game is the decision to kick the field goal. Per Seth Walder of ESPN, he does some type of football analytics, takes a look at all those odds. The decision to kick a field goal did not change the Giants' ability to win the game at that very moment. Meaning, when it was 4th and 1, they had a 99.7% chance to win the game whether you kick a field goal or go for it on 4th down. And I know these are analytics. These are, you know, one-by-one decisions laid out over long-term probabilities. And if I was coaching this game for the New York Giants, I would have done the same exact thing. I got to be completely honest with you. I would have been perfectly comfortable knowing I have Graham Gano, one of the most steady and solid field goal kickers that there is, putting me up by 6 points and saying to Zach Wilson of the Jets, go ahead and beat us here. You got no timeouts. You're going to have about 20-something seconds left, and you got to score a touchdown to beat us, and a field goal does nothing for you. I have no problem with Daboll going for it there if, and here's the big if, because this would be me coaching the game versus him coaching the game, his whole identity when he came in the door last year to be the head football coach of the New York Giants was to be aggressive and to go for it. You remember what he did in Tennessee last week against, at that time, what was the number one seed in the year before in the playoffs for the AFC. He went for 2, and it turned out to pay huge dividends for the Giants because he kind of set the tone with the team that we're going to be aggressive here, we're going to go for it. And then yesterday, if you're Brian Daboll, to turn around and kick the ball when all you need is a yard to put the game on ice, it just is inconsistent, and it doesn't make sense with the philosophy and the program that he was really trying to build here. This has been a coach who, since he walked in last year, or at least last year when he came in the door, he played pretty much every game to win the game whenever possible, the Commander game at home notwithstanding, because that tie eventually put the Giants over the top and got them into the playoffs, which helped get them, you know, where the Lions were 9-8, but the Giants had lost to the Lions, but the Giants were 9-7-1, so that tie kind of played dividends. But outside of that, he was not coached to lose the game or just to stay competitive in the game last year. He coached the games to win the games, to go old school Mike Singletary, a little bit aligns with you right there, or not Singletary, that's Herman Edwards, that's a bad job by me. Listen, it's 4th and 1 in this spot. Saquon Barkley should be able to get 1 yard. 1 yard. If you're not comfortable giving Barkley his 36th or 37th carry, it probably would have been at that point, to getting the 1 yard, then honestly, why not call a naked bootleg with DeVito? Why not trust him to take the ball, run around with no chance to pass it if you really don't trust him to throw the ball, and get that 1 yard? With DeVito, this is a guy who's lucky to be on an NFL field. You have to think in this spot, he's absolutely going to sell himself out and give his body up to get the 1 yard. The problem here was that Gano ends up missing the kick, and now the Jets had a shorter field to go down, and obviously we all know what happens next, but the defense should have never collapsed like this to get the Jets into position to tie this game with no timeouts, that much field to go, and this, you know, little margin for error. And what the issue is, the biggest issue, and what no one in the world is talking about, is that Kayvon Thibodeau jumps offside and the clock stops because even when the Jets don't have a timeout. That's where I need to kill the coach. He has got to be saying, no matter what, before the defense goes on the field, do not jump offsides. The team was in prevent defense anyway, only rushing 3. I know Thibodeau had 3 sacks in the game. I know he was dominant. I know he looked like Lawrence Taylor at times yesterday. Yeah, I'm throwing that out there. That's how good he played right from the get-go in the beginning of the game. But the sack in that particular moment was not all that important. Keeping the Jets off the board was the only thing that mattered. A sack, yeah, it's great to get 4 sacks. He thought he kind of ended the game with an exclamation point when the Jets had 4th and 10 and he sacked Wilson. But honestly, if the quarterback holds the ball for longer, more time runs off the clock. It's not necessarily the worst thing in the world. I mean, it gives the Jets a chance here by the fact that he was jumping off sides. Thibodeau, I'm talking about. The fact that he jumps off sides, it gives the chance the Jets needed to get one more completed pass, and that more so than any other decision that had proceeded earlier with not going for it on fourth down, that's what did them in. So kicking the field goal versus going for it on 4th and 1, again, I would have kicked the field goal. I got no problem with that if you're not a coach like Dable who's come in, set the tone to be aggressive and go for it and go for the win. I have no problem kicking the field goal. With Dable, the way he's been coaching, with really nothing to lose in this spot, I think it was the wrong play, even though I would have coached the game exactly as he did. And I know that's kind of convoluted to say, but really the biggest nail in the coffin was adding more time by the fact that the clock stopped with that Thibodeau offside penalty on a play in which the Jets got 20-something yards anyway. So to me, that's not what's being talked about enough, and I get it. It's because Thibodeau had 3 sacks, but the pivotal play in that particular moment was to not give the Jets more time to work on the clock. Now, the other thing that people are trying to find a way that the Giants got screwed in this game. The Giants didn't get screwed in that end-of-the-game situation there right before the Jets got the spike off, so the second pass that they completed. I went through the rule book today. There is no mention in the league rule books. And if you want to look at the exact rule, I believe it's something like 3.2 in the NFL rule books. There's no mention that the official needs to pick the ball up and set the ball down in order for it to be spotted. Listen, if you look at the play right before the Jets spike the ball, so if you look at kind of the way that they set the ball up, the official does touch the ball, and that indicates that the official had no issue with the spot of where it was. The center for the Jets puts the ball right down at the 17-yard line. So somehow the center knew exactly where to put the ball, and again, it does not need to go directly into the official's hands and have him put it down because the ref was okay with that spot. Is this a bit unconventional? Yes. Was the rule interpreted wrong? No, it was not. Because again, if the ref thought that that spot where the Jets center put the ball was wrong, he would have picked the ball up and the clock would have been over. Now, what I want to know is how often does this happen where, you know, the clock is running down, they got no timeouts left, and the official is okay with the spot that the center makes. I don't think that that happens quite so often, but again, but by the letter of the law, it was not done improperly. How often is this done? I don't know. You'd need to comb through, you know, probably hours of film to figure out how often they are okay with a spot like this. I don't think it should be common practice that the center gets to really put the ball where it should be. I think it's okay that the ref picks the ball, spots it down, because again, that's how it's always been done. But I have to keep continuing to stress that by the letter of the law, nothing wrong was done at all. I would like the college rule to kind of be adapted here in this spot where the clock stops on the first down and the refs get a chance to set the ball. This way, I don't have things potentially decided by officials in these games. I don't want the officials to get caught up in some type of scrum and trip and fall down and they can't set the ball and then a team runs out of time. I would rather have the clock stopped, give the refs a chance to get the ball, and then it starts as soon as they set the ball. I think that that's a much more fair rule. That would have obviously helped the Jets in this spot even more, but I think going forward, the NFL should definitely take a look at something like this. Now, enough about the referees, because the Giants needed to win this game and shouldn't have been relying on the refs to have one more second come off the clock there. The play calling in overtime by Dable, this is another chance if you want to kill him. This is a spot to do it. I'm not one who's normally going to destroy the play calling. But if you aren't confident in DeVito to throw a pass to a wide receiver, then honestly, put Barkley in at quarterback. Let him go wildcat. Let him run the triple option. I got no problem with that here if you really don't think he can throw the ball. when you have quarterbacks like Tyrod Taylor as your backup and Daniel Jones as your starter, these guys are incredibly gifted athletes, and they love to take off and run as much as possible. It's kept them in the league, if you're in the case of Tyrod Taylor. And for Daniel Jones, it got you the pretty nice contract that, I mean, we can debate this for hours, but you're wrong if you think he deserved it based on what he's shown so far. But at any rate, I know it's tough to find a third quarterback, but you have to have a quarterback in there who you feel comfortable with throwing the ball. And this was a guy who was in camp from July. There's got to be five plays that he can run and execute and throw the ball down the field. And again, what did you have to lose? What did you have to lose in trying to throw the ball down the field? Your season is on the line. You've already blown the game in just a ridiculous fashion, but you get the ball to start overtime, and you really have nothing to lose. You got to throw the ball down the field. You got to get it so that your record's 3-5, because that's at least a little more maneuverable than going 2-6, in which your record is screwed. And now the Giants basically can only lose one more game the rest of the year if they want to even have a chance of the playoffs, and that's just really not going to happen. That's not realistic based on the quarterback scenario, what they have right now, and the quarterback scenario, what they might have even if Jones comes back based on his performance. Again, you can't be this conservative with all the checkdowns to Barkley. Trust that your guy can throw the ball downfield, and if he doesn't, you're going to lose the game anyway. Because Wilson, at least, while he's not great, while he's probably not a starter long-term, he at least can make some throws. And if you really didn't trust him to make any type of throw at all whatsoever, why not go for it on 4th-and-1? I mean, I keep coming back to that. You probably should have gone for it on 4th-and-1. And if you really, again, don't trust him to throw the ball down the field and you don't want to go Barkley in the Wildcat offense, can you try, you know, some type of option read, a veer right, veer left to go, you know, old school service academy type of plays? Can you run a, you know, can you set up some type of triple option to, again, service academy type plays, basic football? I mean, DeVito's thrilled to be in there. This is his chance. He'll do anything to win the game. But to just dump the ball down to Barkley, and I know you got screwed because of a holding call, which it definitely was a hold, to make it 1st-and-20 there in overtime. And, you know, trying to give 1st-and-20 to a quarterback like DeVito, it's just not going to happen, unfortunately. But the play calling there left a lot to be desired. You needed to try something. Why not try a trick play? Why not try a flea flicker? Why not try a reverse? What did you have to lose? You're, again, you've got your third quarterback in there. You needed to let everything out there to try to get your team to 3-5. Daboll set the tone of his tenure with his aggressiveness in that Tennessee game in week 1 last year. But to do what he did there with that just awful play calling, zero aggressiveness, check down, check down, check down, that's not aggressive enough in a game that you absolutely needed to have, in a game that really you almost had winning. And once the Jets got the ball back, the cherry on top of all the mistakes that the Giants made from about 27 seconds left in the fourth quarter was the Adoree Jackson pass interference. That was goodbye and good night, because we knew that Greg the Leg for the Jets was going to kick the game-winning field goal. All in all, if you're the Jets, if you're a fan of the Jets, you have to realize this. Wilson isn't going to be a top-level starting quarterback. But when he was given an absolute series of gift after gift after gift, Thibodeau penalty, Jackson penalty, missed field goal, he was able to take advantage and make the plays when you needed it to win the games. And I understand he's not a big-time quarterback. He's probably not going to be a big-time quarterback. But he had a winning record last year in games he started, 5-4. 4-3 this year, if you count week 1 where he played all but 4 of the plays. I know Rodgers started that game technically. But I think with a good enough defense for him, his team can win some games. They're going to contend for a playoff spot, even if this win was ugly at times. And even if future wins going forward are kind of ugly. The Giants have now lost to the Jets 3 straight times since that epic Christmas Day game in 2011 where Victor Cruz went 97 yards. You think about 2015, the Giants blew it. They lost in overtime. You think about 2019, the Giants got just bamboozled and embarrassed and run over by the Jets. Jamal Adams took the ball right from Daniel Jones' hands and took it to the house. And then this year to lose in just horrendous fashion for the Jets. against the Jets, I should say. If you're the Giants, that's a bad job. You walk around, you parade yourself, if you're the owners, if you're management, like you are the definitive number one team in New York. Honestly, if you take away the Super Bowls, and I know that's crazy because the Giants have won, you know, they've won four since 1986, which goes back almost 40 years, but there's not many teams that can say that they've won the four that the Giants have won, pretty much only the Patriots. Maybe the Steelers. No, not the Steelers. I mean, I'd have to double check this, but I think it's really only the Patriots who can talk about that level of success. If you go back, going all the way, just if you go back to 86, I should say. But the Giants, you know, outside of years when they win the Super Bowl, they're not much better than the Jets if we draw the line of demarcation, even since 1986. So just an embarrassing loss for the Giants, the way that that collapsed was painful. I'd rather just get blown out. I wouldn't want to have victory pulled for me yet again. And I know I'm kind of coming at this with a neutral standpoint, truly analyzing the game as opposed to screaming and ranting. But, I mean, the season's over anyway. This team's not making the playoffs, not with a third-string quarterback. Their division's loaded. They still got to play the Eagles twice. So it's just, it's not going to happen if you're the Giants. And if you think about the last 3 weeks for the Giants, they've lost a game by a yard in Buffalo. All they needed was 1 yard on an untimed down, and they end up winning the game, and they lose by 1 second in this game against the Jets. I mean, that's pretty hard to do in 3 weeks, to lose a game by a yard and lose a game by a second. Now, the picks. I had been the number one capper in America picking NFL games, all right? This was an off week for me. I understand 2-2-1, it's not technically a losing week, but if you know anything about, you know, the way the wagering works, you're down due to having to lay the minus 110 in each one of these games. We're sitting at 27-11-2 on the season. We go 2-2-1 yesterday. We're still picking 71% of the games right. I mean, there's not many in America out there, in Canada and the world, who can say they're picking NFL games against the number at a 71% clip. But we went 3-2 last week, went 2-2-1 this week. That, even those 2 weeks are down weeks, we're still at 55% for these 2 weeks. That's still pretty darn good, because of course you don't factor in the push. So we're going to look to bounce back a little bit next week. This was quite the week for, you know, sharp players. They had the Broncos most likely. They probably have the Seahawks on the right side of that 3.5, laying the 3.5. So it was not really a pretty week for yours truly, but 2-2-1 is not a disaster. And like I mentioned earlier on in one of the earlier podcasts, I should say, if you're giving out plays and you hit 56, 57%, that's pretty darn good. And with the start that we had, if you're following all of them, you can live with some 3-2, 2-2-1, even 2-3 weeks. And I'm sure there'll be an 0-5 week. There'll be a 1-4 week to come, because it's just so hard to pick these games. The guys and girls making these numbers, they are as sharp as can be, even pushing back on someone like me who's been analyzing these games and picking these games pretty much since the 90s in one way or another, even as a really young kid then. All right, we're going to go around the league right now, talk about some of the other stories around the National Football League. I think Burrow and the Bengals are back. This was one of the games that I was totally wrong with. I had the Niners laying the 5.5. Burrow goes 28-32, 280 yards and 3 touchdowns. I was an absolute fool for being so confident to back the Niners. I was honestly only this confident because they hung a line of 5.5 points against the team with definitely a better quarterback, meaning the Bengals far and away quarterback. You know, Burrow's much better than Purdy. There's no doubt about that. But I figured, you know, the fact that the Niners were laying 5.5, I figured it's a sucker bet to take the Bengals. That was one of the plays that I lost to. Cousin Johnny heads up with. You know, the numbers going into this game, it really favored the 49ers over the Bengals. But now the Bengals are only 1.5 games behind the Ravens, who are 6-2. If they, you know, it's on the table for them to still win the division. And from the other end of this game, the Seahawks are all of a sudden in first place. I mean, the Niners are 5-3. The Seahawks are 5-2. This means now the Philadelphia Eagles, I mean, the NFC is theirs. I know it was kind of a two-team race for a while for that number one seed. But the path to the NFC, path of the NFC and the path to the Super Bowl in Las Vegas, it 100% goes through the stadium 20 miles from where I'm standing right now. It goes through the link. It's not something I'm, you know, all pumped up about to say as a Giant fan, but this Eagle team is absolutely dominant. And I know that they beat the Commanders yesterday by 7, but this is a team that they've kind of struggled with, but they beat them twice this year. So it doesn't matter. A win is a win. Even if you win as ugly as the Jets win, a win is a win in the National Football League. So that's one of the games that we had wrong. The next game that we had wrong was Jordan Love and the Packers. Listen, I was wrong to take the Packers getting a point. I gave the stat about the 91% of the money versus 64% of the bets. That's something I usually like to follow. But those indicators are not going to be right 100% of the time. And the real big story here is with Jordan Love. You could argue he wasn't set up to be successful. But if you're going to draft a quarterback in round one, you better play him right away. Because, you know, the amount of money it counts against the cap, that's the time to kind of add superstars around and fill those positions, even at stuff like safety and cornerback and all other different spots on the football field. I don't think he's been given a fair shot because of how long he's had to wait his turn. But I think if you're the Packers, you cut bait with him. You say, all right, it was a first-round pick, and it is what it is, but this guy isn't going to be the guy. And I know he showed a lot of promise in week one against the Bears, but it might be time for them to cut bait with him. Next game we're going to talk about real quick, the Steelers. I mean, we knew what the Steelers were doing with the lack of offensive touchdowns they were scoring, being 30th in defense in terms of yards, while only allowing 13 touchdowns. That luck had to eventually run out. The Jaguars were two-point favorites in Pittsburgh. We backed the Jaguars in this game. We were against the trendy Steelers and Mike Tomlin getting the points at home against the number. So in Heinz Field or whatever it's called now. But the Jaguars go in them, kind of a ho-hum game. Trevor Lawrence is just a much better quarterback. I know that Pickett got injured, but Lawrence is, you know, way better than him. You don't need an expert to tell you that. So Jaguars, pretty impressive. Started off 1-2. They lost to the Texans early in the year, but they appear to be clicking right now at 6-2 also. So interesting game there. One of the games that we got right, I don't really have much info to talk about because I was kind of bouncing all around yesterday. I was watching the Giant Jet game in the car, in the stores while running errands, but I feel like I had a strong enough feel for that game as I gave you 15 good minutes on it. But the Saints do, in fact, beat the Colts. Like I said, I like the fact that in this game you have the line flip from the Saints being the dog to the Saints being the favorite. That's an indicator that I always like to look at, and I ended up being right in that game. Gardner Minshew, again, he's just not really a big-time starting quarterback, and it's shown. Now, we'll give a note here on the World Series. I don't like to rip teams for being in the World Series because as a Yankees fan, I'm absolutely desperate to get in there. The Diamondbacks, the Rangers, this is, we talked about this two podcasts ago. This is not the most amazing matchup, but I'm having a blast watching the first two games. I'm pumped up that Arizona's in there. Listen, I lived in Arizona for 14 years. I was never really into the Diamondbacks, but I'm as familiar as anyone with this fan base. And I got to call out the Diamondback fans and really the Arizona sport fan in general, not the University of Arizona, because basketball fans would die hard. But they are just a bunch of front-running frauds if you're going to these World Series games. I'm going to give a shout-out to the Phillies fans as a result of this, because you couldn't get into that ballpark here at Citizens Bank for less than $200 or $250 a ticket. The Diamondbacks had NLCS tickets available for $7 or $8, and now all of a sudden it's over $500 to get in the door. I know it's the World Series, but one round ago you didn't show any interest at all. If you're sitting there in Phoenix, Scottsdale, Mesa, Tempe, Gilbert, wherever you are, now all of a sudden, like I said, it's over $500 because Phoenix can kind of be a front-running event town. I've seen it with the Suns. As soon as they get good, everyone wants to go to these games. No one was sitting there in the second deck from the top in the 2013-2014 season when I had season tickets for the Suns. You know, no one was sitting there. No one wanted to watch Goran Dragic lead a team to 48 wins. It was a decent Suns team, not the worst team. But you get the idea. You know, people jumping on the bandwagon, and I was also a partial Diamondback season ticket holder in 2019. And even now, they still are sending me emails talking about your opportunity to get World Series tickets. I probably should have bought the season tickets just for the World Series tickets, knowing how much they're selling for. So, I mean, just unreal. And I say this only because of the fact that, yeah, Diamondbacks are a fun story. I'm rooting for them, but I got to call out kind of the fraudulence of the Phoenix sports fan. Not the U of A sports fan, but the Phoenix sports fan. So I feel like that's got to be called out. And don't let anyone on TV tonight try to fool you, telling you that this is any type of great fan base, because the people who are into baseball in Arizona in a night in, night out basis, and don't let anyone tell you differently. Again, if it's a random July night, the people who are super into the baseball are Chicago Cubs fans. When the Cubs won the World Series in 2016, about half the people I worked with were decked out in Cubs gear from Illinois, Indiana, Iowa. They're not getting into Diamondbacks baseball. This is an improbable run by the Arizona Diamondbacks. They're a likable team with guys like Corbin Carroll, Merrill Kelly, Ketel Marte. And again, I'm rooting for them. But don't let anyone tell you that the Diamondbacks have any type of diehard fans, because the people who are super into baseball and have one team in the Phoenix area, for the most part, they're Cub fans. They might be Dodger fans. They might be San Francisco Giant fans, because there's just so many transplants. But I think the Cubs are definitely the number one team there. And one other note on the Diamondbacks. I gave them out before the season. I think March 28th was the podcast. You can look it up. I gave them out as an over. So it wasn't like I was out there saying, oh, no one's going to believe in this team. But I think the number was like 74.5, 77, somewhere in that range, mid to low or mid to high 70s. I said, yeah, this is definitely an over team. They're going to do better than they did last year. I like their pieces that they had there. Look, they win 84 games during the World Series. And again, I'm pulling for them. I think they're a fun story. I got no interest in Texas Rangers. Bochy's won enough World Series. He's a cool story too. But let the Diamondbacks win. Let the players on that team win. Torey Lovullo seems like a pretty good dude. Let him get his championship as well. He stuck through some pretty awful years as manager at the D-backs. All right, Schloss Rant live. Philadelphia suburbs. Got the World Series going tonight. Giants just absolutely disappointing loss yesterday afternoon. We'll see you later, everyone.